This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. Annie Ross has just started a 6-week singing engagement, Wednesday evenings with some occasional Saturdays, at Danny's Skylight Room in Manhattan. That's a small surprise and big treat for those who haven't had much chance to see or hear her in recent years. Annie Ross was the female voice of arguably the most popular jazz vocal group of the late 50s and early 60s, Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. A generation before Manhattan Transfer recreated the form, Dave Lambert, John Hendrix, and Annie Ross developed and popularized what they called vocalese, putting words and tightly performed harmonies to existing jazz instrumental arrangements and improvisations. Annie Ross left the trio in 1962, moved to England, and ran her own club for a couple of years. Since then, she's appeared occasionally as an actress in an eclectic roster of films. From Superman 3 and Throw Mama from the Train, to one of her last roles, performing in 1993 as Annie Ross and the Low Note Quintet in Robert Altman's movie Shortcuts. When Terry Gross spoke with Annie Ross in 1990, they started with the song for which Ross is best known and for which she provided the lyrics. The song is called Twisted, and her vocalese is based on a melody and an improvisation by tenor saxophonist Wardell Gray. Twisted has been recorded by, among others, Bette Midler and Joni Mitchell. Here's the original recording, Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross from 1959.
My analyst told me
what?
That I was right out of my head the way he described it.
How?
He said I'd be better dead than live. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought
what?
I was crazy, but I'm not. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
My analyst told me
what?
That I was right out of my head. He said I need treatment,
yeah.
But I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, went out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts,
nuts.
No more ifs or ands or buts. Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard of three? I knew that this was meant to be. But I heard little children were supposed to sleep tight. That's why I drank with the vodka one night. My parents got frantic, didn't know what to do. But I saw some crazy scenes before I came to. Now, do you think I was crazy? I may have been only three, but I was swinging. They all have been grilled them. They all have been Edison and also an Einstein. So why should I feel sorry if they just couldn't understand the reasoning and the logic that went on in my head? I had a brain, it was a pain, though, to let them love at me when I refused to ride on all the double-decker buses, all because there was no driver on the top.
No driver on the top.
She must be out of her head.
What's the matter with her?
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head the way he described it.
Annie Ross, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
We just heard Twisted.
Yeah.
I just need to ask you if you were in analysis when you wrote that.
No, I was not and have never been. It was really suggested, the title Twisted suggested to me the whole story of a woman going to an analyst. But no, I wasn't in analysis.
How did you start doing vocalese, putting words to jazz solos?
Well, I went to see a man called Bob Weinstock, who had a record label. And we talked, and he said, you know, have you heard Moody's Mood for Love? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, do you think you could do something like that? And I said, sure. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and my necessity was need of money. So I took a stack of records home, played them. The one that I really liked was Twisted. And I was back the next morning with the lyrics.
And then you started doing more of it because it caught on so well?
Yes, and I loved the idea. It was really a challenge. It was so different from writing a regular song. And I enjoyed telling a story, having a beginning and a middle and an end, you know.
Did you want to keep singing standards even when you were doing vocalese?
Oh, sure. I mean, I don't think quality diminishes. And you can't beat great songs. I mean, there are some wonderful, wonderful ballads. They don't go out of style. They, you know, come around again after a long time. I got very bored because I had always sung standards. And, you know, I thought, I don't want to sing this anymore or that anymore. But then years pass, and you look at them with a fresh eye. And like I say, the quality is still there. And they're masterpieces.
Let me play a song that you recorded before you teamed up with Lambert and Hendrix. This is from a 1957 session that you made with baritone saxophonist Jerry Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
And the session has recently been reissued. The title is Annie Ross Sings a Song with Mulligan. And I'm going to play the Dietzen Schwartz song. I guess I'll have to change my plans.
Oh, good.
Well, I guess I'll have to change my plan. I should have realized I'd lose my favorite man. I overlooked that point completely until the big affair began. Before I knew where I was at, I found myself upon a shelf, and that was that. I tried to reach the moon, but when I got there, all that I could get was the air. My feet are back upon the ground, 'cause I've lost the one man that I found.
My guest Annie Ross recorded with Jerry Mulligan. So how did you team up with John Hendrix and Dave Lambert?
I happened to be at a friend's house, Bob Bach, and he and his wife Jean Bach were very dear friends of mine. And they got a phone call from Dave, I think it was, and he said, I have this idea about putting words to a Count Basie album. Can I come over, bring John, and demonstrate what we have? I said, sure. So he said, do you want to stick around, Annie, and see what's happening? I said, sure. So round they came. They played one of Basie's numbers. They both sang the solos. I thought, hey, that's great. And the next thing I knew, they asked me if I would come down and conduct some session singers that they had engaged to record about, I think, 4 or 6 tracks. And they said, you know, that the women, they wanted me to give the women the Basie feel. Well, that was a laugh in itself. I mean, you can't teach that to anybody. You have to be born with it, be brought up with it. And I tried. The upshot was that the session time had, a couple of hours to go on the record session. They had no more that they could do because what they had was not good. They were going to scrap it. And the producer was tearing his hair out and saying, my God, we've lost this money and blah, blah, blah. And Dave Lambert, who was into electronic things, etc., said, well, what about if we multitrack? So I said, okay. And, I mean, you know, we all had great ears. We heard the chord sequences. Learning the solos was not that difficult for us. And it was, I think, one of the great moments of my life because we heard the first track back. And that was fine. That was the melody. Then we recorded the second track. They played it with the first track. Well, well, that was something else. Then the third track was unbelievable. The fourth track was mind-blowing. And we knew we had something absolutely great. It was that feeling that we were breaking new ground, that we were creating. And it was exciting, and I felt giddy. I mean, it was just a wonderful, wonderful moment.
Annie Ross speaking with Terry Gross in 1990. She'll be performing Wednesday evenings through the end of September at Danny's Starlight Room in Manhattan. Before we get back to her interview with Terry, let's hear her in another Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross recording. This is Jackie, based on a tune by pianist Hampton Hawes, with lyrics by Annie Ross.
I sat one night right in the middle of my glass of Coca-Cola.
That's so.
I thought how
what?
I now but get to some biscuits and a slice of Gorgonzola.
Oh, oh.
I then felt
what?
A twitch,
which?
Which seemed to come from something under my ear.
Here, here.
I wondered if I
was
high or if it was a mere hallucination.
Maybe.
I turned round
but
and found
what?
Something I thought was merely my imagination.
Maybe.
On my blouse.
A mouse
sat there, and this is what I started to hear. If you want to hear the story of a mouse in all his glory, then I'll tell you all about the time I was kicking with a band. And all the cats thought I was really the end. They all stand around to hear the sound that was coming from a crazy little creature who was standing on the bandstand. That was me. I sure dug Prez. I thought that he was real cool. And if the president was swinging, I would feel so high I thought that I'd fly out the window crazy. He really wasn't when he'd open up with Mr. Lester Leaps while I'd leap right with him. I dug Diz, I dug Bert, I dug Miles Wardell. So can you just imagine what kind of a man it was? We'd feel right just swinging on it. Everyone would gather around. They would even give it a hand when I would step up on the stand and take my little horn out. My name's Jackie, in case you were wondering. I was quite popular in the idiom. Things to come and I was renowned as a mouse with the sound. That was cute, but the boot was the loot, which was really nothing but the lowest. But we thought the days were cool like that, and then they fell flat when the agent came and told us we would have to change our style. They wouldn't pay a mouse scale nowhere. I decided that I couldn't take the sacrifice I'd have to make, so I just climbed into my hole and dug the scene from there. I sat one night right in the middle of a glass of Coca-Cola.
That's so.
I thought how
what?
I now
but
get to some biscuits and a slice of Gorgonzola.
Oh, oh.
I then felt
what?
A twitch,
which?
Which seemed to come from something under my ear.
Here, here.
I wondered if I was high or if it was a mere hallucination.
Maybe.
I turned round
but
and found
what?
Something I thought was merely my imagination.
Maybe.
On my blouse,
blouse.
A mouse,
mouse
sat there.
What?
That was Lambert Hendricks and Ross, recorded in 1958. And incidentally, that was Elvin Jones on drums. Let's get back to Terry's conversation with Annie Ross.
So the group stuck together. But most of your stuff was not over track like that. It was mostly just straightforward trio. You left Lambert Hendricks and Ross in 1962. This was before the group broke up, and you were actually replaced by another singer, Yolanda Bavon. Why did you leave?
Well, there are many reasons, primarily because I was fed up with going on the road. I really didn't feel that I had any kind of a life. And I wasn't brought up with my family. I felt that I really needed to try to find my roots and kind of find out who I was. And I always loved Europe. I'd spent many years there in Paris. And so I decided I would stay. And I eventually met Sean Lynch, who was an actor who I married. And I said a tutelure to the United States for a little while.
Well, once you got to England, for a couple of years, you had your own club called Annie's Place.
Annie's Room.
Annie's Room, thank you. And then after that, I think you started doing stage work and even some television.
I did a lot of television at the same time as having the club. But the club was also very difficult. It bore my name, and the people who went there wanted to see me, which meant I had to be there every night. And it was like every night was a party, you know. I wouldn't go there till, say, 11 o'clock at night. I'd get home about 5. I would sleep until 1 or 2. I mean, it was a crazy, wonderful, but mixed-up kind of time in my life.
Annie Ross speaking with Terry Gross in 1990. More in a moment. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 1990 interview with Annie Ross, former member of the vocal jazz trio Lambert Hendricks and Ross.
You came to America from England when you were, I think, 6 years old.
Scotland,
from Scotland.
5 and a half.
Okay.
No, 4 and a half. I was 4 and a half when I arrived.
Now, once you got to America, didn't you stay there with your aunt, the singer Ella Logan?
Yes, I did. I came to New York with my mother and father and my elder brother. And I won a contest, a radio contest. The prize was a six-month, really a token contract with MGM. And I went out to L.A. with my aunt because my aunt started doing films. And then my mother left, my father and mother and brother all went back, and I was raised in Beverly Hills in L.A.
Did your parents have any reservations about leaving you?
I'm sure they did. Sure.
Did they want it that way, or was it you who
I think they probably felt that it was best for me to do that, that maybe through doing that, I could become a star. But they already had stars.
You mean California already had stars?
Sure, they had Shirley Temple and Jane Withers and, you know, many, many young kids.
Well, how were you groomed? What kind of image were you given?
The Shirley Temple image, but with a kilt.
Oh, because you were Scottish.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I had a thick Scottish accent, too.
Well, that must have been rough.
Oh, I think everybody thought it was adorable.
Did you have those little curls?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So you had won this mini contract at MGM through the talent show?
Yes.
And when the contract was up, what happened?
That was it. I was up. They had no use for me, and my aunt, who was really my guardian, decided that I needed an education and that she didn't want me to get big-headed and, you know, all those things.
So what happened next?
Well, then I just went to school. And then when I was 16, I came to New York and I went into the Academy of Dramatic Art, the American Academy of Dramatic Art, and stayed there for a year, then went back to Scotland and re-met my family.
What was it like to meet them after not having seen them for so long?
Well, as you can imagine, it was weird. It was very strange. I didn't know them at all. And this is your brother, and this is your brother, and this is your brother, and this is your sister, and this is your aunt, and this is your grandma. Please. You know, I hadn't seen them since I was four.
How did you start listening to and then performing jazz?
Well, my aunt gave me a record of Ella Fitzgerald singing A Tisket a Tasket when I was four. And I learned it, and I could do it. And a wonderful thing about my aunt was that in our house in L.A., there were always a lot of musicians who hung around. And they were musicians from Duke Ellington's band, indeed, Duke Ellington himself, Roy Eldridge, Earl Garner. And so I moved toward modern jazz as opposed to Dixieland.
Do you expect to be singing more? How much do you sing nowadays?
At the moment, I don't sing very much at all, but I am getting... I can feel that kind of restless feeling that says, yeah, you should... You know, I mean, I go and see singers a lot. And from them, I get an idea of, oh, now wait a minute. I remember a song that I really loved that I'd like to do, and I'm getting that kind of thirst for it again.
Annie Ross speaking to Terry Gross in 1990. She'll be performing on Wednesday nights and occasionally on Saturdays throughout September in Manhattan at Danny's Starlight Room. And she has a new CD recorded earlier this month called Let Me Sing,